Good morning and welcome to our meeting. It's 9 a.m. on December 3rd, 2024. And time to convene a regular meeting with Pelham County PD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. Joining me today are Commissioner Tony Olson, Commissioner Rebecca Wolf, Christy Sterling, our Chief Information Officer, Colin Wilbrock, our Chief Legal Officer, Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, and Jenny Rich and Morgan Spolster, Deputy Clerk of the Boards. Please mute or turn off your cell phones or other electronic devices at this time. This session is for the board and general manager to study and discuss issues among ourselves and with the PUD staff. Are there any items to be added or changes to be made to the public agenda, Commissioner?
Yes, we're going to add item 1D.01 at places, amended page number 11 about the 2025 class adjustment options.
Thank you. So first up is our general manager briefing session. We have our Chief Information Officer, Christy Sterling, filling in for John today, who will facilitate our conversation this morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Commissioners. Glad to be here. We have a few things on the agenda today. We'll start off with the immediate update from Aaron Swain.
Thank you, Christy. Good morning, Commissioners. Aaron Swain, Lead Communications Specialist. Happy to be here this morning. Happy the weather has calmed down a little bit. Much wind out there. We had obviously a little bit of a storm. So most of the coverage in the media you've seen recently has been media coverage on storm restoration, a little bit of storm prep, all that kind of stuff. So I'll jump right into it. So we had some really good media coverage on TV. I think Kelly and I joked a little bit during the storm that Cairo had us on speed dial. We were doing a lot of live hits with Cairo, did a lot of stuff on the field. Fox was out there a lot. And I just want to give a thank you to all the crews, crew guides, all people who are out in the field. A lot of times these reporters just kind of go out there looking for stuff. And it will happen upon our folks. And this year they were great. They were awesome. They're patient with media. If they got interacted with, they were kind and nice. They pointed them to us, which is what we want them to do. And so for all that, it was really good. This first story I'm going to show you is a story that came together based on a media post or a social media post that Krista put out about all the work our warehouse crews do. Cairo saw that and reached out and wanted to do a story about the kind of behind the scenes look at what it takes to respond to a storm like this. We also got some mutual aid crews in there and all kinds of stuff. So if we could play one.
Thank you. So let's check in on our power outages right now, because statewide more than 377,000, actually it looks like that number went up, 416,000 at this hour, customers in the dark. Now almost 90% of them are in King County, so a lot of work still to be done there. Now we saw a similar situation last night, but in Snohomish County, hundreds of thousands of customers were without power. That number down to about 35,000 right now. Our son is Jason Sloss joining us live there. Jason, you saw firsthand those field crews really working to make it happen.
There is progress. Like you just mentioned, now the outage is down to about 35,000 after a peak of 135,000. And tonight we got a behind-the-scenes look at those ongoing restoration efforts.
It's just a prepared thing. We're so good at being prepared as best that we can.
That preparation appears to be paying off for Snohomish County PUD crews that are working nonstop to restore power to customers after the storm.
There's poles we probably don't even know about that are laying on the ground. We can't even see till we get in there because it's huge, huge trees everywhere.
Sue Martin leads the warehouse team at the district's operations center, described as the backbone of restoration efforts, making sure all the materials are on hand so that field crews get what they need to make repairs.
If they get out there and they realize that they need more stuff, they just call. We have delivery drivers around the clock to get some help.
A night after the storm, local crews working 40 hours straight will finally get some rest. So the district is getting support from other areas.
Thank you very much for helping.
During our visit, a mutual aid crew arrived from Mason County.
We'll do a 40-hour stint, probably go home or get a motel, take some rest if need be, and then come back. So we're here for the long run until everything's back up and ready to go.
Martin says it looks like teamwork, everyone pulling together to make sure crews are able to finish the job.
The goal is, I wish we could get it done tonight, right? Because we know there's people that don't have power. But those guys out on the line crews are, I mean, luckily right now it's not pouring down rain, it's not 20 degrees, but it's still stinking cold out there, and they're kicking butt.
Yeah, and we're also told that more than a dozen mutual aid crews will be helping out here in Snohomish County. Live in Everett, Jason Sloss, Cairo 7 News.
Certainly need all the help we can get, Jason. Thank you.
I have to laugh because the Mason County PUD person they put in front that they volunteered was the apprentice. That was pretty funny. He did a great job. But big shout out to Stu Martin and the warehouse crew. Yes, I'm sure. But yeah, huge shout out to Sue Martin and the warehouse crew. They took time out of their, busy schedule right there to, kind of work with the media. You know, that's a media hit that takes about a minute and a half, but there's a ton of work that goes into that, setting it up, working with the media and all that kind of stuff. And everybody came together and it was a great team effort.
And also unique. I mean, normally these stations, the media covers the work that the crews are doing in the field and the damage. But that's a great insight.
Yeah, I think sometimes they're looking for something a little more unique that's maybe not just crews. Yeah. And what we're finding is our social media posts are actually driving a lot of that. Later in the storm, there was a social media post that we put up about safety around our crews, right? Like paying attention to road close signs. Same reporter wanted to come out and do a story about that and how they could be safer on crews. It was great for us. We're able to get all that safety messaging out and talk about it. So, we're finding that social media is really kind of pushing some of that stuff. Really well for us.
What I particularly liked was it was fantastic to have in the field shots, but in the warehouse to see that it's not just there, it's the whole operation.
Yeah, it takes a ton of people.
Together.
Yeah, transportation, warehouse,
exactly.
Energy control center, all these people. That's like a beehive of activity behind the scenes that normally you don't see. So shining a light on that's been really cool.
Was it intentional to have some women involved in those, like driving those big trucks and things?
I think that was just the people that were doing it.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Wasn't planned.
No. Next up, we had a really great story with Seattle Times. Again, similar type thing. They contacted us, wanted us to do a story about crews, things like that. Seattle Times, again, not normally the ones who reach out to us, but we were more than happy to run them out and get some photos of crews, talk to a crew member and things like that. So for us, it was really great, just in terms of getting all that kind of attention on what they're doing out there on kind of a whole regional scale, not just Everett Herald, which does a lot of coverage for us. And there was coverage all over the place in my Everett News, Linwood Today, Everett Herald covered us quite a bit too. I want to talk a little bit about storm communications. We've really changed up how we communicate during storms. And we've added a lot of different features with the outage map, with broadcast tools, so we can talk straight directly to customers, outage texting, all that kind of stuff. It takes a ton of work. This year, Kelly and I kind of worked together on a different way of responding. So we had a lead PIO, which was Kelly, and she really was behind the scenes gathering all the information, doing all the key messaging, coming up with making sure working with crews and station one, station two, and kind of finding where people are working, and then putting all of that into some great talking points, and then putting that out through key accounts, government relations, making sure everybody was in the know. And that freed me up to work with media more, be able to talk directly to customers, work with our social media group and get photos and things like that. So I think it worked out really well. Yeah. So I'll talk a little bit more in detail. So we sent out a prep email right before the storm to our customers, just letting them know that there was a storm in the forecast, they should be preparing. We also sent a follow-up on, I think it was Saturday morning, we sent an email from John talking about what the restoration was gonna take, that we had restored power to 95% of our customers at that point. And we also put an emergency banner up on our website to sending people to the outage map. Social media management, Krista Rasmussen led that. David Kruger did a lot of work on our social media. Again, it was just fabulous. And then got a great mention in Dave Summers' newsletter. So just wanted to point that out. Again, like I said, a little bit different this time. We really leveraged the broadcast tool. That is a ton of work because not only does it get posted to our outage map, but it gets texted to everybody who signed up for outage texting. This time we were able to, for this storm, really use the regional updates. So it's, Arlington, Lake Stevens, Snohomish area, Monroe, they all get their own specific updates. So later in the storm, when we knew where crews were, we had a little better idea of when stuff might be getting back on. We were able to give customers better updates and really talk directly to them. And outage texting was a success. We've heard that people were happy with it. There's some ways of improving that, but we'll be working on that for the next storm. And then the internal reports, we heard glowing remarks from government relations, key accounts that those were, and customer service, that those were great, just keeping people in the know. And District Daily, of course, always keeping our employees in the know. I just wanted to talk about photos from the field. Krista went out a number of times, got some really, really great photos. Our crew guides and our crews themselves took a ton of photos and sent them to us. Those are critical for us because it allows us to paint the picture for our customers and really show the damage that's out there.
Is that a miniature horse? Anyway, please go on.
And I do want to say really quick, and I should have mentioned this on social media, but just some stats from social media. We put up 141 posts during the storm. We had over 1.5 million impressions on all these posts. We got 2,300 new followers, and our total users reach was around 830,000 people. So just through social media, we were able to do that. And then this photo right here from above the trestle, kind of looking out at Everett, the mountains. Really, really great photo from Krista. She got 2,000 interactions on that photo, which is about twice the amount of any other post we put up.
That needs to be submitted.
Yeah, exactly.
Aaron, if we talk about publications, I just want to say, at the risk of gushing, how incredible the response was for this storm. So in my short time on the PUD, this was a week-long storm. I think that's about as long as I had, but it felt completely different.
Yeah.
And it was everything. It was the IT department and the ability to send out those alerts. It was incredible communications. It was government affairs. John gave us a peek at some of the internal documents, you know, where there was city-specific information, key accounts.
Yeah.
It just, I don't know if it'll help our J.D. Power score, but I hope so. I think it's hit it out of the ballpark, right? It just seems so much different.
Okay. Yeah, I think that goes back to that planning that we did to kind of separate stuff. And Kelly did an amazing job of really putting all that information together, keeping everybody kind of on task with where we were going and what messaging we were putting out. And then we're able to leverage those new tools to put that messaging out and keeps everybody on the same page. I agree completely. I think our team did a fantastic job.
And then the other thing, you know, we really hit the generator safety harder.
Yeah.
And I noticed that was spawning other discussions on social media that weren't coming from us,
yeah,
about how to do that safely. And I think that's something for us to think about, how we can focus on, you know, we're all about safety to ensure, because it's not just our linemen that are at risk, it's anyone who walks.
Well, and what's funny is it's a major part of our December wire. It's a note in our December wire. It's about generator safety. But that again came from a storm meeting where we're hearing from crews that are hearing the buzzing and seeing that maybe there's some of this backfeeding onto the system. And they're saying to us, hey, get this information out there. Let people know they got to make sure that they're not backfeeding onto the grid.
Yeah. The conversations were also positive. And the few negative comments, I felt sorry for those people because they were squelched, not by us, but by other people. But it really was done.
I wanted to add that.
I am gushing now.
Okay. Sorry. Just as a comparison, and you were very modest in saying you didn't want to throw King County under the bus or something like that. But my daughter, who lives in Bellevue, was with us for 4 days with her two big dogs because she depends on Wi-Fi and her house was cold. They have electric heat. And for 4 days, she was with us. And checking the outage map for her region was very, very difficult. She couldn't be sure about her neighborhood. It was difficult.
Yeah.
For her, not for us. We were happy to help them.
Well, I won't mention any peer utilities, but I will say that I think we did a fantastic job, and I think we really knocked it out of the park. And it was total team effort, not just communications, right, but all the other groups. Really get us the information that we can then put out. So it's a team effort from everybody across the utility.
Well, sure.
Quickly, just publications. Kevin Lavering, project manager here, wrote a really amazing piece on harnessing Gen AI as a project manager and how you can use the tools to lighten your work, make it quicker, make it faster. I think he did a great job. And that is in the Western Energy Institute's WE Mags. And then finally, I did want to mention that we got a bronze customer satisfaction award from APPA. So just really great. I think it shows that we're turning in the right direction. And like you said, Commissioner, hopefully this kind of stuff makes it a goal next time, right?
Yeah. Oh.
That is it for me.
Thank you very much.
These questions for her?
No, I'm so pleased that that target, once power starts coming back on for certain areas and that targeting message, that is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Because folks have been out 10 hours or more and I think, do they know another power? Mm-hmm. So those targeted messages are great. And also behind the scenes. Because they're so, it's almost every department is involved in some way.
Yeah.
And I mean, finance,
yeah.
Accounting.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
Well, and I think, you know, getting back to what Commissioner Wolf started off talking about, sort of, we got to let our public see what's behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Not just in every aspect, taking them out there and interviewing with trees on lines and interviewing the poor apprentice.
It shows the totality of the response that it takes.
Exactly.
And it makes them understand more why this is going to take multiple days possibly to get you back on. To the direct messages from that, I think that's why we're not seeing as much of people going on social media asking for information. They're getting it directly on their phone from us. Previous terms passed, it was just pampering us. I live here, and where am I going to, you know, when am I going to get back up? This storm, we didn't see so much of that. You know, I think more people signed up for the outage text, and they're getting that information directly to them.
Yeah, and it's clear that when their power's out, they're on their phones on social media.
Yeah. They got to do somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
I do want to mention in the back, there are some amazing kids' art that some kids from the Machias Elementary did to thank all the crews and all the work they did. So just make sure to check that out. Thank you.
Thank you. Well done. It's great.
Thank you, Aaron. And commissioners, it is so true. It is amazing to watch the storm operations kind of from the back end and see that it is truly a district-wide effort. It's so much that goes on and all the hard work and patience that our customers have. So amazing job, everyone. Thanks, Aaron. The next up, we have community engagement with Kelly Stickney.
Good morning, commissioners. It is my pleasure this morning to have my team with me to give our biannual update on our community engagement activities for the year. With me, I have Sophia Hispe, Marketing Communication Specialist, Heather Herbst, Education Coordinator, Kelly Singletary, one of our Education Coordinators, and Laura Zorick, who's also a Marketing and Communication Specialist. We're going to briefly give you an update on what we have done in terms of our education program and our community engagement since June, and then I will be back up at the end to give you a preview of what to expect in 2025. So for now, I'm going to hand the mic over to Sophia to talk to you about what we have accomplished over the summer and this fall and winter.
Good morning. My name is Sophia Hitsky. I am a communications and marketing specialist. These are the many events that we have done since June. I know many of you have come out to them and they've been super fun. Some of the notable events that we've done for the first time or reoccurring. The Link Light Rail grand opening, those were two events that we were there for the first time at Mount Lake Terrace and at the Linwood Station. That top picture, the top two on the left, that was a huge turnout for us. And then also Zip got to ride the train between the two new opening stations. And we also had a booth there and got to interact with the public and talk about the work that we did on those projects. Another great one that's recurring that we did was the Run for Warmth. We raised $4,000 for the Community Energy Fund, and it was just a really great day getting to see everyone out there and running or walking. Another awesome couple events that we did were the Integrated Resource Plan events. We had five, a couple in-house, and then we also took them to the Cedar Valley Community School and the Snohomish Senior Center. Those events were getting feedback from the community members, asking them what their energy futures looked like, if they thought they might get an electric vehicle, solar panels, things of that nature. The Snohomish Senior Center, that was a really great turnout. We had 70 seniors there that we had play our game of where they would kind of put their IRP bucks into these fund boxes to get a better understanding of what their energy futures looked like. And we found out that when there's free food, people are more likely to show up to events. And then finally, the Tulalip of Life and Ice Festival that we had on the 23rd of November, we were really grateful that we could still have that event just because it was kind of during the end of the big storm. We were there, we got to participate in that with one of our bucket trucks and help the chairwoman of the tribe put the star on the tree and then kind of kick off their Lights and Ice Festival. And then just looking into December, we're going to be back at Tulalip Lights and Ice. We're also going to be at Holiday on the Bay. And then we have our rescheduled Jennings Park substation ribbon cutting in December.
So we're going back to Tulalip's?
Yes, their festival goes until January.
Do we know a date yet?
Yes, it will be on December 7th, so this Saturday.
Do we know a time?
It will be from 4 to 8 p.m.
Is that a booth like you get?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So there'll be kids' games, some light-up bracelets for kids or adults. We found that adults really liked them too. And then Zip and Zap will also be there as well.
Yeah, the booth was very good.
Yeah, I was unable to make the first one, so I'm going to pop in.
Thank you. And now we have Heather Herbst, Public Education Program Coordinator.
Morning.
Morning.
Heather Herbst. I'm going to talk to you about what we've been up to since June. But first, I'd like to introduce probably the best thing that's happened since June, my new partner, Kelly Singletary. Kelly is going to be in charge mostly or lead on middle school and high school happenings, and I lead on elementary school happenings, although we do work together for almost everything. Yeah. So, fall semester is well on its way. As you know, our student lessons inside classrooms are the cornerstone of our program because we meet students where they are in classrooms. And so we have about 9,350 student classroom hours already this fall. Obviously, we'll be continuing that through the rest of the year, and the second half of the year is always busier. So this is a good start, but we're really gearing up. This summer, we did several trips to Woods Creek Sustainability Center. We finished with Gold Bar Elementary School being out there. We've had several requests from Boys and Girls Clubs to go out and get tours over the summer. We had homeschool students and scouts over the summer. We had a homeschool trip planned for this fall. We had huge amount of people sign up for it. Unfortunately, weather canceled that. It wasn't safe to go out there. So plan on rescheduling earlier in the year next year so we could try to avoid some of that weather. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about is that besides the STEM nights and the field trips and the classroom presentations that you all know about, we have a lot of interest in people asking an expert. So a teacher or a parent or a club will come and reach out to Kelly or I and say, you know, we have questions about dam construction. We have questions about salmon. Maybe we're data and analytics at WSU. Maybe we are some students calling to interview somebody for a college course that we need to do. And they come and we reach out to our experts. Kelly and I don't have the answers for everything, but somebody almost always has an answer here, and everybody is willing to help. And that's been really great. There's a couple of examples up on the slide there. It really is important to me and something that I'm really proud of that our community considers us trusted partners. And so when we have a community helper day at an elementary school, they call us. You know, and so I think that's really great. And I think it's really awesome for our employees to kind of take a little bit of a break from their regular day-to-day and go and let our community know that you're important to us. I'm taking time out of my day and your questions are important. And it really leaves a lasting impact on our students. Let's see. Another thing I really wanted to note was that we had our first high school intern last summer. I'm not really sure that everybody is aware of that because we were so busy this summer, but we did have a high school intern from Cascade High School in Everett, and we're planning on hopefully strengthening the program little by little. And so we have some interest from Arlington School District as well this year. And so Jeff Roberts, Paul Kiss, Casey Galbeck, our legal team, everybody has come together, HR, to strengthen this opportunity for high school students. I'm really excited for next semester. We're gearing up for lots of cool stuff, and hopefully in June we'll be able to talk to you a little bit more about everything else that's going on.
I'm very, wow. Ask an expert and the intern. You know, I hope we could develop those, but, you know, broader. But then I'm thinking you open up Pandora's box and we'll have to be employed. So, but in particularly in the parades, we've got to draw them, and the high school students don't know a thing. You know, they just about the career opportunity.
I do know that that HR, and now in conjunction with Kelly, there's a lot of outreach. There's a lot of STEM events that high schools put on,
yes,
but also trade fairs. And so we've been involved in lots of trade fairs as well. We have some exciting things in the works that you'll probably be excited to learn about that are coming up, having to do with that as well. As far as opening up Pandora's box, we do have some priorities and obviously things set around that. And so everybody's coming together and making sure that we're able to do everything well.
And the people, our staff who are involved, are so good at presenting,
mm-hmm,
and explaining and just connecting with
people. They really are. And the feedback I get is always that they're friendly and wow, do they know their stuff. So I'm always proud to send people out tomorrow. Kyle Ligari and Scott Swire are going out to an elementary school, Salem Woods Elementary. And we support the employees that are going out. Maybe they know what they want to say, but they need help because they don't have time putting a PowerPoint together. We'll do that for them. And then they go out and they get it done. And it's always really great feedback. Teachers love us.
The Boys and Girls Clubs, is there any chance that you might be wanting to do more with them in some of these other areas? I don't know. I'm not too familiar with the programs in the Boys and Girls Clubs, but I know that they serve a lot of kids.
Right now, when Boys and Girls Clubs reach out to us,
uh-huh,
we try to help them in the way that they're asking for help.
Sure.
And giving them that help. There are certainly our boys and club, girls clubs all over. The thing is that the range of ages is so great that not everything that we offer fits
right
their need, but whenever we can do that, we do.
Thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Exciting stuff.
So briefly, I wanted to point out a few things to look forward to in 2025. One is the North County Community Office grand opening, which is currently scheduled for March 22nd. This event won't just be a ribbon cutting and grand opening of the office, but it's really an opportunity for us to showcase that entire campus. We're working with our colleagues in line and warehouse to be able to show pole top rescue demonstrations, have our ARC trailer, show what kind of work our warehouse does, and then also with Scott Gibson and our emerging technologies team to talk about battery storage, to talk about our community solar project, and then even showcase our new substation on the property with our substation team. So I think this is going to be a really great event to showcase this amazing asset for the community, and we're really looking forward to that. Of course, again, this year we'll have our Energy Block Party, our Hydropower Appreciation Days. Those events continue to be a success, and we're pleased to be able to host them again. We'll have a number of ribbon cuttings next year for our community solar project in South Everett, and a few for Woods Creek and Osprey Park. We're planning a ribbon cutting for the side channel sometime next year.
Are we going to be standing on the creek?
That we can make that happen for you, Commissioner. Absolutely. we always get requests for Zip and Zap. It's amazing how many of our community partners have recognized how wonderful our squirrels are, so there'll be more Zip and Zap. We're planning on returning to the Evergreen State Fair in some capacity next year, and of course, new parades. Right now, there are two things we're researching. One is a new fall event. The Run for Warmth won't be continuing in the same way it has in the past, but we are reaching out to look for different opportunities to keep the spirit of that going, but with new partners and perhaps a more enhanced focus on our community energy fund. And then our amazing education team is working for the with the Foundation for Water and Energy Education Academy, which is a similar program to the ones you might know about for Chelan PUD, where they bring students in for a week to do an intense academy around everything related to the work that we do as a PUD. So that is a potential partnership that would also include Seattle City Light. And we're digging into that right now to see if we can dig our toes into that in 2025. So those are the amazing things that we have planned for next year. Happy to answer any questions.
I want to commend you, Kelly, for doing a good job at the APPA conference, telling the whole U.S. about what we do here. You did a super job, and this is the kind of thing you promoted.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You know, just to comment, getting back to education, I've said before, but I think it's such a critical piece. As Commissioner Olson said, you know, students graduate, they don't really know what they want to do. And I think the PUD, we do everything, every kind of job. And if you want to be part of a clean energy future, utilities are a great place in the Northwest to be a part of that. Thank you all.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for that update. All right. Next on the agenda, we have Moss Adams Entrance Conference update from Sean Hunstock.
Hard to follow that, Sean.
Right.
Not exciting.
It is for me. Thank you, Commissioners. I am Sean Hunstock, Senior Manager, Controller, and Auditor. A couple of weeks ago, you should have received an electronic copy of an entrance document from Moss Adams. They have a requirement that we document that is shared with elected officials. So that was the format for that. And we decided we wanted to just discuss it briefly, very briefly here. Moss Adams will be coming in and starting the annual financial statement audit in a couple of weeks for their interim audit work. And then they'll be on site mid-February through mid-March to do the year-end audit work related to 2024. The entrance conference document mentions that they don't audit everything we do. That would be a real expensive audit. They take a risk-based assessment of different areas that they want to look at each year. And that particular document mentions three areas that they're going to focus on in this next financial statement audit. Those are management override and controls. So the auditors will typically look at different parts of our internal control structure and how it operates and whether we're staying in compliance with our internal controls. And so this year, one of the areas that they're going to look at for internal controls would be management override of those controls. The other two items are utility plant and construction work in process. So that's the largest single item on the PUD's balance sheet is our utility plant, our capital assets, our infrastructure that we have. And every few years or so, they will take a deep dive into that and look at the activity that's happened over the last few years. And then they'll also be looking at power trading revenue, especially with the product switch coming up. It's a good time for them to look at what we're doing now and make sure that everything looks good and we're in compliance with our own directives and contracts. And then they'll be doing a similar analysis in a couple of years after the product switch. We'll be at the end of the financial statement audit, then they will have an exit conference. So that one will be in person with Moss Adams. And so they'll be available at that time to answer any questions you might have. And you can certainly reach out to them in the interim as well. Are there any questions related to that?
Thank you. So, I mean, one quick question. So do we have Moss Adams doing all the audits they can do? I know that they've asked to do some of the audits.
Yes. So they do the financial statement audit, the federal single audit, and the Viva Trust audit. So those are all of the audits that we are able to contract out with. The other ones that the state auditor's office does, the state mandates that that office does those audits. Correct.
Thank you.
Yep.
And thanks for that, Sean. And Sean's not going too far away because he's next on the agenda, carrying on with the audit theme. We have audit activity update, again, by Sean Hunstock.
Thank you, commissioners. This is an update that the controller typically gives this time of year, just to look back at all of the audit activity that has happened this year, and then look ahead to some known upcoming audits that are currently scheduled for 2025. This year, I have the pleasure of turning over the presentation to one of my staff, Tyler Wells, an accounting manager. He's responsible for the reporting and compliance unit within General Accounting. So he and his team really do the bulk of the work on these audits. So with that, I will turn it over to Tyler.
Manager, overseeing the reporting compliance group within General Accounting. Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
As Sean mentioned, this is a presentation we do each year to kind of give an audit activity update to everyone. There's been a lot of hard work put in throughout the year by not only the finance division, but numerous other departments and staff throughout the year for these audits. So the first page goes over the audits that Moss Adams is either currently in progress or has completed. So the first one is our 2023 PUD financial statement audits, which Moss Adams is an independent CPA firm that does the verification of financial reporting. They presented to you guys in April an unqualified opinion with no exceptions noted on this particular audit. They also performed the 2023 federal single audit as well, no unqualified opinion with no exceptions noted. Currently, they're in progress performing the 2024 PD financial statement audit. They're conducting interim audit work the week of December 16th through the 20th. They'll be here for about a week or two. And then, as Sean mentioned, they'll return in mid-February through the middle of March and do the final financial statement audit. They've also completed the 2023 Viva financial statement audit, which is this verification and eligibility of proper like medical payments and claims, as well as the financial statements that are associated with those. They unqualified opinion with no audit comments.
Question for me. What does it mean by unqualified opinion? Because they make a determination that there are no exceptions noted. So seems like it would be qualified, but I mean, it's not logical to me.
Sure.
I'm sure they're qualified to do that.
Right. And we are qualified as well. So a qualified opinion means that the financial statements are fairly presented. And if that's not the case, then it's a qualified opinion. So unqualified means that the financial statement audit is a good one. It's a good result. If they have to qualify that opinion, that means that one or more things are not in compliance with generally accepted accounting principles.
Okay, thank you.
There's the word but.
Yeah.
Moving on, the next slides are all the audits that are conducted by the state auditor's office that are either in progress or complete. The first one on here is the 2023 accountability audit, and you may recall they were just here last meeting, but it was in November, The 2023 accountability audit is actually in progress. Currently, they're working on it, and it's a verification of like compliance with like state laws, internal policies, and such. In addition to that, they did complete the state of Washington 2023 CPA financial audit. So they do an audit of the work performed by Moss Adams, and there was no exceptions noted, as well as the CPA single audit review. that Moss Adams conducted. The bottom one is the one that was mentioned. The renewable energy was the one that they were just here and gave a presentation on with no exceptions noted. And that was for like a period of January 1st to December 31st of 2023. The final slide that we have are all of the upcoming audits that are either in progress or are going to be completed in 2025. So we have two that are for the Clean Energy Transformation Act, or CETA, and the greenhouse gas content calculation, as well as energy assistance to low-income households. Those are for the time period of either 2022 or 2022 to 2023, and they're going to be scheduled in 2025. So we don't have a date scheduled yet. Then we have three audits that are going to be for the Energy Information Assistance, or the EIA. And there's two that are currently in progress, which is the energy conservation target and the energy conservation acquisition. And the final one is the renewable energy compliance, which is the one we do each and every year that they were just here reporting on. Any questions?
Questions or comments?
What did you say the EIA is? Energy Information
Assistance.
Assistance. Is that state?
I have one quick question. Can you remind me again why we use Moss Adams for the ones we can?
The Moss Adams has this, we could use the state of Washington for our financial statement audit if we choose. However, they don't have the experience with energy and that type of work. So we elect to hire an independent CPA firm to conduct that audit.
So does that help us when we have like bond sales, things like that? If we've got more expertise? That's not even said.
It does.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, Sean and Tyler.
I'm qualified for everything.
Commissioners, I would add one audit that we, IT's recently started discussing with the state auditor's office. And that is the, they offer a critical infrastructure cybersecurity performance audit. We've used various agencies with the federal government in the past or other agencies. The state auditor's office does offer that, and we're looking at using them next year. And a notice to you will be forthcoming just to let you know officially that we intend to engage them in that audit sometime in probably late Q1 or Q2 of next year. Mm-hmm. All right. And last on our morning agenda is cost of service analysis and preliminary revenue adjustment 2025 and through 2029. And that is Peter Downer.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Morning.
Good to be back here again. We're talking about the cost of service analysis and preliminary revenue adjustments over 2025-2029 budget. I'm Peter Downhauer, Senior Manager of Rates, Economics, Energy Risk Management, joined also with Christina Leinenweber, our rates expert here in the department, so I'll be handing it off to her later on. Purpose of this presentation is to present some rate adjustment options based off of our cost of service and the 2025 through 2029 budget and forecast. Commission guidance is requested on the preferred rate class adjustments at this time. So a little bit of an agenda. We are gonna cover the COSA results. Some of this is a little bit of a repeat of what we've seen in previous meetings on the same subject. We're going to talk about the history of cost of service and rate adjustments, and then we're going to get into the rate adjustment options that we've prepared in 2025, rate options by class, and then a potential future rate path for one particular trajectory, and then talk next steps. We are on the December 3rd meeting here, and as mentioned, we've had couple of meetings prior to brief you on the cost of service, initial results, and the philosophy that for rate design the district has. This is also following the 2025 public, I should say, budget public hearing, which opened on October 7th. Today we're going to be kind of still at the high level, pardon me, talking about individual rate class adjustments, but envision coming back to you at a subsequent meeting to go into the actual details of how that would impact each and every rate and the components of the rates themselves. That would be followed by an open public hearing in the new year, a request for commission approval following that. These rates, just to also be clear, since we've had a couple of rates briefings lately, these rates would be effective in April 1st of 2025. So at this point, I'm going to hand off to Christina.
Thank you, Peter. I'm Christina Leinweber, also in the Rates Department, and I will be briefing you and answering some questions that came up at our previous meetings regarding the cost of service and the potential rate options for this year. So a brief recap for any of those maybe online or that did not attend the previous briefings. We have a budget as our first step in creating rates. And from that budget, we take a 4.6 system average rate increase as the need for the district this year. And then the next step in the rates process and the step that we discussed on the last two presentations particularly is the cost of service analysis of who pays what of that overall 4.6%, but on a class level may differ from that percentage amount. We had some discussions and questions last time about why we are here in the situation that we are in, as of our need for rate increases in general and for various class rate increases in particular. And so we decided to remind ourselves a little bit about the rate adjustment history here at the district. We did have a long period of time in the late 2000s. As you can see here, there's a long gap between mid-2015 and 2021, where there are no bars for system average rate increases, which means that the district did not elect to raise in rates in those years. And so at that time, we didn't have an opportunity to either increase our total revenue, but also really didn't take an opportunity to do cost of service analysis and look at class level adjustments and alignment in the class, between the classes as well. So that is a question of why we're now in a different situation and having some of these questions come up.
So, Christina, this doesn't include the bond or past years?
No, it does not. These are just sort of system average overall rate adjustments on a broader level due to our broader underlying cost adjustments. And there it goes. In the residential in particular, we did a little bit of archive work in looking at analysis that was performed, even in some of the years where we didn't have rate increases. Some years we did find some analysis that had been performed just for due diligence. Other years we did were unable to find any documents, but we can see that over the last, based on those documents we were able to find, we did find that the last few years, from maybe 2016 onward, the analysis and the cost of service from those times have shown that the residential rate classes would have been listed for larger adjustments had any rate adjustments been implemented during those years. Just for your notice, the years in which there are blanks are not zeros for the rate classes. Those are years for which we were unable to find any analysis. And consistent with these previous recent cost of service analysis, this year's cost of service analysis also showed that the residential class has fallen behind in regards to its cost of service rate increase, which would be above the system average at 10.2. And some of the commercial classes have gotten a little ahead of themselves in their rate increases. And so as a result of these figures, we showed in the previous presentation here what is listed as option A as doing a 5.2% rate increase for the residential class was our initial recommendation to the commission, which shows it at about an average $6.09 monthly increase for the residential, each residential customer. Now, this is an average, and so it's going to differ from person to person. We would recommend putting this adjustment into the fixed charge. And so if we did that for small services, like the multifamily and the very small amp services, that would look more like a $4.20 per month increase. And for the medium services, which constitute the vast majority of the other services, it would look about a $6.60 monthly increase. And so that averages out to the $6.10 between those two figures. And you can see then that from, if we set the residential at that amount, some of the other, the amounts we have to set some of the other classes to make up our total 4.6 desired system average rate increase. Now, during our last presentation, the board and commission was interested in seeing some other potential options. And so we've set up here a little menu of options, B, C, D, and E, with smaller residential increases. And as you can see, that flows out into the commercial and industrial and lighting classes of having to have somewhat higher increases in order to get the necessary system average increase. We've also prepared a potential trajectory for the slowest and smallest of these increases, which is trajectory E, which sets the residential rate increase at the system average of 4.6 and therefore has larger increases for the commercial and industrial classes. Now, this is a very assumption-driven slide. This assumes that the cost of service proportions remain the same for the next 5 years. And it also assumes the system average rate increases listed here to the extreme left of the slide. Of course, as we do this, the cost of service each year, those proportions usually change so that, you know, as we come back next year, it will probably not be these amounts. And then, of course, the system average rate increases that we elect to put in our budget each year also can change from these forecasted values. But if we do keep those two assumptions here in our forecast, we can see these might be potential trajectories out into the future. And you can see that we still remain at some deviation from cost of service using this slower trajectory, even though we're closer than we are today. So this is a slow path, and certainly if we chose one of the option, you know, A through D, we would get closer to cost of service and more quickly. So those are the things that we're balancing as we're looking at these options and all of the potential trajectories. So that is the meat of our presentation. Of course, we are here briefing you right now, and we're hoping that you can provide some guidance to us about which of these options you think would be most appropriate for this year, so that in our next briefing, we're hoping to bring to you particular rate designs with an actual price per day or price per kilowatt hour or so on and so forth to make these percentages happen.
Questions, comments,
Commissioner? Well, I think it's very interesting. I still lean toward the previous recommendation, but we got so far behind for so long that it seems like it's We have to catch up at some point. We did ask for this additional work because I think was felt that the initial recommendation for the residential class was perhaps too aggressive. I don't like to raise rates, period. But because there are, I believe, a whole pile of unknowns that really in the last month or so has grown that could affect our service territory in terms of economy, and unknowns with regard to changes in the industry, electrification, what's that going to cost? And I'm thinking, are we only setting up a situation that in future years we're going to, I would not support continuing each year to get further behind in cost of service, further behind in addressing what was presented to us a few years ago. And we said, this is way out of whack. And we need to assign the true cost of service to each rate class is as close as you could get, because we receive particularly in the residential class, the revenue and the cost just don't match. So in summary, I think I'd like us to think into the future. Do we front load this? Or do we take the risk, should any of these unknowns come to fruition, we're going to be looking at a much higher increase in the back years, in the later years. And I look at it from that perspective.
Yeah, well, I understand. First, I have a question. Maybe we don't know the answer yet, but I know for residential, I believe it's 100 amp and 200 amp services are the majority of our customers. Do you have a thought on how much their increase would be? For the options?
Well, as I said, for option A, the small, which is the multifamily, and the small amp services would be going from 36 cents a day to 50 cents a day, which is an increase of 14 cents a day or 420 in a 30-day month. And then for the medium customers, that would be going from 59 cents a day to 81 cents a day, which is 22 cents a day or 660 for a 30-day month. And that's the highest option shown there. That's the 5.2. And so, of course, it sort of proportionally would just go down for options B through E.
Yeah, I'm more comfortable with our plan that this increase go to the fixed cost. I think that makes sense. I guess I think 5% or greater is a big increase. So I could be supportive of option C or E. I was surprised at option E on the next slide. It's as close as it does, but I guess that's also dependent on taking an extra bite next year too.
Yes, we will not get closer if we continue putting the residential increase as the system average. We will not get closer.
Yeah.
Getting closer is contingent upon having these larger increases in 2026 and 2027.
Yeah. So I think they're wanting some kind of head nod.
I would
be supportive of either C or D. It keeps us just below the 5%. What are your thoughts, commissioners?
As I explained, I'm looking out to the future and knowing how volatile this industry is right now. I would support option A that was originally presented to us.
Okay. I guess I'm really right now, as you said, there's so many things out there that could happen, could change, that we have to be really risk averse right now. And so that's why I would lean toward option A.
Okay, I don't know. I'm not sure what the risk element is. We're going to collect the 4.6% across all the classes, but we're not going to collect more than 4.6 with option A.
Define risk factor.
Commissioner Wolf said risk. I'm not sure what's risky about
the other uncertainties option going forward in the next year or two before.
Yeah, I guess, can we go back to slide 9? I think it's startling how much this moves around. I'm comfortable making a little bit of, I guess, what we call progress, but I'm not comfortable with going full 5.2%. I think there's a lot of noise in this data, and look how much we dropped from last year. I know we did some of that intentionally, but I don't know if our intention caused it to drop that far. 2%. It's just a big increase after a big increase.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
And I look forward to having the conversation again next year.
Well, we're never going to achieve what the board a couple of years ago when the whole rate structure was changed. We keep pushing it out. We never achieve parity in terms of assigning the cost of service to the real cost of service to each rate class. So we keep, initially, I think it was like we do it in 5 years. And now we're going to be pushing it out farther. And I'm always concerned that that we could actually, what happened in 13, 14, 15, and 16, I'm the only one, right, that was around. We're in this pickle now because I believe that we really didn't dig in terms of, were we running COSAs?
We were running some COSAs. We don't have all the details of all the assumptions that went into that.
I guess my focus more is on the future and talk about unknowns. We really don't know where the cost of electrification. We don't know in terms of what I'm hearing in terms of tariffs. And the West Coast, particularly the state of Washington, is the largest. Receives the highest percentage of goods from China. So to me, that then filters on down. I struggle with this.
I'm trying to think of it from the point of view of the individual home, the residence. And I'm thinking maybe it's better to deal with the brunt of it now rather than a year or two down, because chances are it's going to get worse. And so right now, immediately this year or 2025 might be the best time to tighten the belt and pay a little more.
Well, it's front loading it.
Yeah.
Right.
And I guess, Commissioner Olson, all those things you talked about, we don't know how they're going to play out in the rate classes. So it may play out negatively in the residential rate class, or it may play out positive relative to the other rate classes. So we have all those pressures on us for the whole system increase.
Right,
but I'm not sure if we know. That's why I pointed back to that chart and how much variability
there
has been. And so I'm not confident that we're going to be that far off next year. And I still feel, and I understand this, and I understand the logic, especially in the IOU world, I still think a public is different, that without the residential rate class, which I consider the owners of the utilities, corporations, that they don't own the utility, it's the residents, the voters. It doesn't bother me if we're off a bit on our cost of service to them. So I'm willing to make progress, but I'm not willing to go the full 5.2%. We got a little bit of a conundrum, which dawned on me, and that is, we'll be voting on this in January. So we'll have a new commissioner who hasn't been involved in the budget, hasn't been through this whole process. And I don't know what their appetite will be or her appetite will be.
Well, you were the exception when you came on the board. Typically for a new commissioner, this is a shock.
Yeah.
And nobody likes to have our customers open their bill and see that it's gone up because of something we did.
Yeah.
So, but I believe Commissioner Wolf, she saw that really early on. And I am risk averse, and I know this is tough, but if in the future, you know, as we go to 2026, 2027, as you said, things could look better. But in terms of what the residential class represents what percent of our customers?
By customer count, it's 90%, but by revenue, it's about 75%.
So if we continue to get this not corrected, and getting into alignment the cost of service to each rate class. And as you see the numbers, they're pretty big.
So what are the rules, or what is possible regarding adjustments during the year? I mean, if we saw that something drastic was happening in the economy, would we have to wait until 2025? To make an adjustment for 2026 and beyond. So, I mean,
I think we can make a rate increase at any time.
That's what I'm, so I mean, these guys here, this department.
It would still be, the logistics of that would be a nightmare.
Pardon?
In terms of programming.
Right. Practically, we need a few weeks to program it and test it in the system, but the commission is able to change rates based on, on your desires.
Well, the point is, we don't want to have to make adjustments in a lurch, or, you know, in a short term, if we can help. So I guess that's why I'm needing to kind of fix it on the early side. But
looks like Jason has a comment.
Yeah.
Jason Siskowski, Chief Energy Resource Officer. I guess one point I just wanted to speak to you is, any one of these options, we're going to get the revenue that we need to support our budget in 2025. Now, if something goes haywire with the economy or whatever, and you know, mid-year we need more revenue, you know, we'll come back and ask for that. But any one of these options, we're going to be in the same place from an overall revenue perspective next year. You know, if the economy hit, you know, you saw more conservation and residential versus CNI or something like that, it could affect it in that manner. But in general, you know, each of these target to collect the same amount of revenue. I think what really we're grappling with here is how aggressively or gradually do we want to move towards that COSA. We're never going to be spot on with it. But if, you know, each year we can take some incremental steps to kind of get closer to it or move, you know, as it is moving, you know, that kind of puts us in a good spot. So I hope that helps.
It's very helpful.
Yeah, I think will we get the revenue? I mean, we're going, but we are, we said a few years ago, we want to assign those that are using the service, the cost of, to serve them, it needs to be represented fairly in each rate class. And because the residential rate class is, I believe, what was it, $45 million or something like that? But that was the system.
Oh, yes, you're correct. The $45 million under recovery from the residential rate class at the current time.
And so we reduced this year, and based on my experience, it's going to be just as difficult this year. I believe that we would probably be looking at reducing it again under what staff would recommend that is the cost to serve that cost.
Well, we're going to, if we continue with this philosophy, we're going to do it again even if we accept the 5.2. There's still a lot there, so we're still it's the speed at which we do it. It sounds like you guys are both for option A. I don't say I'm disappointed that we can't meet someplace in the middle.
I would like to say that the incoming new commissioner, she's been on the city council for several years in Linwood. She's been dealing with budgets, and she's been at some of our meetings, and she has seen this. And she's a very smart person. So I don't think she'll have a hard time comprehending this when she comes in, especially with your help. But I know it's a hard thing to have to pay more. But we do, I think, offsetting that, we have really good programs to help those who need the help. Maybe that's off topic, but I think about the big picture. So if people are really feeling the hurt and are having a hard time paying the bills, they can look to some of the programs that we have to help them with their bills.
Okay, it sounds like the majority wants to go the recommendation.
I appreciate all the work you did, though, to rejigger this.
Thank you, commissioners. Thank you. And thank you for your feedback as well.
Thank you, Christina. Commissioners, that was the last item on our CEO General Manager briefing and study session.
It is now 10:13. And the board will recess into executive session, discuss legal risk of current practice or proposed action. Under the terms set forth in the Open Public Meetings Act, it is anticipated the executive session will last approximately 45 minutes and conclude at 10:59. Let's call it 10. Let's call it 11 o'clock. The regular meeting will reconvene here in the commission meeting room at 1:30. It is 10:37. Our executive session is has concluded.
Thank you.